Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course. But, that's the name of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
His name was Jeremy. He was on WordPress with a passion for youth sports and some free time on his hands. That SB Nation, they came a-calling. Despite trying to perfect his art, he knew something wasn't right. Then Chris came writing on and started poking fun. They decided to start a podcast, and who could ask for more at the Mountain? Mountain West Connection. Just be sure you don't ever skip this section here at the Mountain. Mountain West Connection. Recaps and previews, such stats, and just random at the Mountain.
All right, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection show here. Check us out at mwcconnection.com. Same thing on Twitter. You can Google us and find us on Facebook. And unlike the theme song, which says this week, I'm Jeremy here, but I'm not joined by Chris. He's hanging out with his family in Las Vegas. Instead, we have a second repeat co-host. Is that whatever, if that's the right way I'm saying it? Matthew K, or Matt of Action on Twitter. Are you feeling okay, Matt? Are you okay right now?
You know what? I'm better. I've put some distance between myself and Friday. So I've gone through the five stages of grief. I'm at acceptance. Everything is okay.
All right. That's good to hear. I want to make sure you're still around. You did answer the phone call, so you are here and not something poor happened to you. But, okay, well, we're going to do what we normally do, go through all the games. Got some bowl stuff, title game stuff, some coaching fires / resigning / quitting news to hit upon. But before the game, what was your thought? Like, how do you think it was going to – the Fresno – of course, we're speaking to Fresno San Jose State here. What was your thoughts going into the game, like confidence-wise? What did you think was going to happen?
Well, I guess it goes without saying that I thought Fresno State would come out ahead. I thought for sure it would be an offensive battle because both of them have had their issues, especially on pass defense. They've both given up tons of points, and you know, Fresno especially was living dangerously, and it just turned out that, you know, their weakness caught up with them.
Because you've mentioned, like, you've kind of defended that their pass defense has been okay, just that the yardage is there because they've been winning by a lot. Is that I know that wasn't the case in this game, but do you still kind of feel, as an overall theme to the season, that's kind of how it went?
Well, I mean, all season long, they've been a bend but don't break kind of defense. They've been an especially, you know, they bend a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they make plays when it really comes down to it. You know, Charles Washington breaking up the, you know, the two-point attempt to get the Rutgers and, you know, making a stop on Boise's final drive and those kinds of things. And then, you know, they ran into, you know, the second best quarterback in the conference, and they didn't have an answer for him.
So what do you think, like, this game was, it was just amazing. I was watching, like, I turned in a few minutes late, and I've already missed 14 points. So I missed the first two or three touchdowns in the game. So I felt the same as you. Heading in, there would be a lot of points, but I thought it'd be Fresno by about 7 to 10 points. Because San Jose State has been playing better. They do have David Fells, who I like in the comment section. Like, I think, I don't remember, it was a whole bunch of hubbub over at the SB Nation recap. I think you were over there a little bit. Some people are like, well, David Fells is just a backup quarterback in the NFL. It's like, that's not a bad thing to go in college to be a backup quarterback in the NFL. There's only, what, 60 of those positions or so of NFL quarterbacks, 60 to 70. So it's not a bad spot to be in. So I don't know if that was a good compliment or what they're trying to make of that. But it seemed like a lot of people were coming out of the woodshed saying, told you. And I think those people don't know what they're talking about.
I think those people don't have the whole picture. They either haven't been watching Fresno State consistently because they would have seen, you know, the improvement that the defense had made in the last few weeks. You know, they put up pretty convincing wins over teams that they should beat. You know, teams like Wyoming and New Mexico. They were putting together more complete efforts than they were in the first month of the season. It just happened that, you know, they caught, you know, a couple of bad breaks. They caught a couple of bad injury breaks. Missing LJ Jones really hurt because, you know, Curtis Riley, as it stands right now, he's not a number one cornerback. You know, he had no chance to stop Kyle Nunn and Chandler Jones. and that was, you know, like I said, that was the Achilles heel of the team. Everybody knew it. So, of course, when, you know, everything goes sideways, that's the one thing that everybody's going to point at. See, they're not as good as we thought they were.
Or their schedule's terrible. And I put a quick comment. I noticed nobody replied to my comments. So I went over to Brian Fender from Football Outsiders. He has his own website where he does strength of schedule. Everybody's saying about the just kind of the Northern Illinois type deal. Well, their schedule's so much better because they played Iowa. If you look at that, I think it's 117 to NIU, 124 to Fresno State. As you said, both sets' schedules are pretty bad, but Fresno's might be a little, or Northern Illinois is a little bit better, and that's the case. They both had a crappy schedule.
Yeah, I had made the argument, you know, last week that Northern Illinois' schedule wasn't that much stronger to warrant the difference that the two teams were getting in the BCS. You know, because one of, you know, Northern Illinois was, they were saying it was like the seventh best team in the nation, and Fresno State was down in, like, you know, the teens. And I was thinking, I was like, well, wait a second, you know, Iowa's win over Nebraska was pretty convincing. And, you know, that's an 8-win team in a, you know, pretty top heavy conference. So then, you know, Iowa may have changed my mind a little bit about them, but you look at it, you know, their other big wins, Ball State hasn't really beaten anybody this year. They lost to Northern Illinois. They lost to North Texas, which is a pretty decent Conference USA team. But
Purdue,
the teams
that, don't forget that Purdue squad.
I'm talking about Ball State.
Oh, no, I mean, but Northern Illinois schedule, they tried to hype up that Purdue win as well.
Yeah, oh, and I'm just saying, like, you know, these quality wins that Northern Illinois is supposed to have, like, when you really look at them, you know, Iowa's beaten Minnesota and Nebraska. Those are two pretty good teams. Ball State has beaten Army. They've beaten Toledo, which is, you know, kind of a middling, you know, MAC team. They've beaten Central Michigan, another average MAC team. There's really, you know, they built their 10 wins in the same way that people are saying Duke has built their 10 wins, that they haven't really beaten anybody.
Exactly. It's just weird how, like, people come out and say, look, I told you, but whatever. But after the game itself, what was – because I had to skip out a little bit on the second half, so I didn't say everything, but it seems like Ron Carragher made adjustments to stop Fresno State. I looked at the possession numbers and checking off, kind of looked over that. There weren't that many possessions, but San Jose State did something to stop Fresno State from passing, because Devontae Adams had all three of his touchdowns in the first half. He had no touchdowns in the second half, and just seemed like San Jose State's defense did something where Fresno wasn't able to do the same on their end.
Well, you have to remember, too, he dropped his potential fourth touchdown right before halftime on that Hail Mary.
That's right, yeah.
And you have to wonder how the game might have been different had he been able to hang on to it. You know, would San Jose State have still gone with the onside kick to try and get back in the game, as opposed to being, you know, I think they were down by one at that point?
Yeah, they were. So, they still 11 points, and the last touchdown was just kind of there just because the end of the game.
Yeah, and you have to remember, too, that they lost Josh Harper very early in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, Harper opened the scoring with that really nice-looking one-handed grab, and then he didn't play again with a hamstring injury. So you have to wonder, you know, whether having to deal with two elite receivers made life a lot easier for that defense.
It would have. I'm not going to argue with all the kind of say that who's right or wrong or anything, but I just figured they did find out Harper for the whole first half, and so why not in the second half, I guess. B'nai Ben-Rucker is a pretty good defender to stop whoever he was on for San Jose State, but I just kind of looked around, like, how do they only go from... But I'm just... Look at the score, 41 to 11. Come on, you got to... I don't know. It's just a weird game, because I'm not saying Fresno State's any good, but we know San Jose State can put up points. We've seen David Fells all year put up a ton of yards, but crappy red zone play, terrible rushing defense caused them to lose to teams like Minnesota and whoever else. Lost to Nevada, man. How did they lose to Nevada? That's kind of weird. Like, they lost to Nevada.
Well, see, and the other thing too is that, you know, you say that there was the perception that San Jose made some kind of adjustments. Fresno State only had four possessions after halftime. Two of those they got 10 points out of. It was just that, you know, San Jose's five possessions happened to take a significant amount of time off the clock. So it wasn't so much that the defense was making a lot of stops. It was that the offense was just staying on the field. You know, they had, you know, their first drive, you know, after the onside kick, 5 minutes, 46 seconds. They're, you know, and then a field goal, 2 minute drive, another touchdown, 5 minutes, field goal, 6 minutes, you know, and, you know, after halftime, they were, you know, 6 of 10 on third downs, and 2 of 2 on fourth down conversions, and that right there was the game.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was looking at their drive charts because they got it like right here. Three drives were over 10 plays or more.
Exactly.
And that was kind of what I thought too. Then there was that interception, one interception. But it's just a game, like, if people don't, we get it. Fresno didn't play the best teams, and San Jose State has a crappy record, which they should be better, but they've also had a lot of injuries. They finally figured out they have more than Noel Grigsby to throw the ball to. They can actually mix it to Chandler Jones and everybody. They had three guys, 100 receiving yards each and 6 touchdowns. I just think it's a game where, like you said, they ran into a team that could outscore them, and whoever made the fewer mistakes won. And even though it seems odd, Fresno State had those two fumbles in the first half, they still scored. They scored on both of those, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, so it's not like they left any points on the board. It's just, I just think it came to, like you said, the onside kick. They kicked a field goal instead of a touchdown. And just scoring, that's kind of what it came down to. They couldn't get the touchdowns in the second half, even though their possessions were the same. It sucks that they couldn't get out in the last game of the year. And it was a great game to watch. It doesn't matter who you're rooting for or whatever. If there's 115 over 100 points, it's a great game to watch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, between the two quarterbacks, David Carr really only made the one bad throw that was intercepted by Keith Smith. I mean, other than that, the secondaries were having adventures trying to cover everybody all day.
So, with the game behind them, they play Utah State next week. But what do you think? Because there's all the Heisman odds that came out again today. I still don't understand. Okay, Derek Carr had a pretty good day. 5-19, 6 touchdowns and a pick. How has he dropped out of consideration after that game just because his team loses? I don't understand that. How he's not going to win. But I don't see how an invite is not inevitable, even with everything that happened with AJ McCarron out of it. They even somehow have Taj Boyd back in the rankings after they got beat east by South Carolina. What's your thought about this? I'm just confused because this is about as confusing as Northern Illinois getting that giant jump after beating Toledo. Why is he not even considered anymore?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. That was another one of those things that I was defending earlier. Like, I was, making the argument that, he leads the nation in total offense, pass yards and rushing yards by an average of 40 yards a game. Garrett Gilbert from SMU, who we remember from last year, mm-hmm. He's at 379.5. Derek Carr is averaging 418 yards per game. Jordan Lynch, by comparison, is averaging 351. And, Jordan Lynch has, I think, 42 combined touchdowns passing and rushing. Derek Carr is 45. And he only has 5 interceptions. So I don't understand why people are selling him short, because it certainly wasn't his fault that they lost that game.
Correct. Yeah, because the Jordan Lynch and Carr stats, if you put them all together, they're pretty comparable. Interceptions are the same. Touchdowns are, like I said, a few less. I think the total yards, like you said, it's still, he has 1,700 rushing and over 2,000 passing.
Yeah, I had made the argument that, if guys like in recent years, like Graham Harrell from Texas Tech, put up a lot of numbers in a pretty pass-friendly system, someone like Kellen Moore or someone like Colt Brennan from Hawaii, that if those guys were all top 4 in their year's Heisman voting, and I don't see any reason why, even if he's probably not going to win the award,
no,
but he's got the numbers where he should at least be in that same group with those same guys.
Because it's Jameis Winston's lose, and like all the players that lost, like, I get if you lose, it shouldn't affect you too much, but like Johnny Manziel, A&M lost, everybody lost. Even the guy from, Andre Williams from BC, isn't that his name, the running back?
He's having a really good year.
Yeah, he got hurt, but he still has over 2,000 yards, and they don't count the bowl game for this. So it's like, how can it not be? Like, if they're going to bring 5, Jameis Winston, I guess Johnny Manziel, running back from BC, why not Lynch and Carr? Because they have one loss, it's, like I said, it wasn't his reason fault they lost. What are you going to do, throw 9 touchdowns in a game? Come on, what do you want him to do?
Well, yeah, I guess that's what he would have had to do in order to keep people's attention, you know what I mean?
I guess the loss hurts him, but it's just like, look, it's right here, like, how does Taj Boyd, and even, who's in here still? Braxton Miller's in there, and he missed 3 games.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
He missed basically the whole San Diego State game and the next 2 games with that, I think, is a knee injury versus the Aztecs. So I'm like, I get he's good. They're national title contenders, but it's like the A.J. McCarron thing. How is he even considered when he's like fifth? I think I read somewhere fifth in the Big Ten in passing yards. The Big Ten's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, if it were up to me, I would my top five would probably be Winston, some combination of Winston, Carr, Lynch. I would probably include Bryce Petty and Baylor because he's still got another game to put up some pretty solid numbers. And he actually leads the nation in yards per play, which I think counts for something. And then
How is Teddy Bridgewater still getting consideration here? He is on the board, and Derek Carr is not. Teddy Bridgewater.
I don't have a good answer for that.
I'm just asking the obvious questions. I'm just trying to figure out, like,
he's been very good, but they've been out of the national conversation for like 2 months now.
But his stats are not mind blowing. Like 290 under, he's 100 yards less than Derek Carr per game.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just want to hear it. Like the only thing he's better than him at is he has two less interceptions and completes 1% more passes than him all year.
Yeah, like I said, he deserves some love.
How is he not a finalist for the Davey O'Brien Award, and how is Devonta Adams not a Blitnikoff finalist either? I know you're going to say, I don't know, but I looked at the receivers. Sammy Watkins should not be on that list.
Yeah, I mean, I
know what you're saying, but I wanted to ask somebody a question. Like, it makes zero sense. He is, like, if you look at the mocking the draft, their kind of rankings. Is he a redshirt sophomore? Or is he Adams?
Yeah, I mean,
he's ranked in the top 15 draftable receivers, and he's just crushing it. I don't know. I don't know. It's weird. Like I said, we're gonna say I don't know about a million times on these conversations for the Fresno.
Actually, did you say that he wasn't a Davey O'Brien finalist?
Derek Carr is not. No, it was McCarron. I'll look it up, but he was not a final. So I say change something.
Oh, okay. I must be looking at a very old article.
He was a semifinalist.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I'm looking at.
That's probably
on the bright side. He is one of the finalists for the Unitas Award, and he is. That was the last thing I remember hearing about. I think he's also still in the running for the Manning Award, if I'm not mistaken, because he's won it like twice, like the weekly award twice.
Yeah, I also thought it was odd because Darren Smith won that weekly impact award, like was nominated like six times, but wasn't a finalist. I found that odd as well.
Yeah.
Lot impact award. I'm like, oh, I wrote some about it. Cause let's just see here. You nominated more times. And goes, oh, you're not a finalist. Sorry. Better luck next time. All right. We better move on. Cause that's probably 14 minutes of Fresno talk. Not many people to say they lost. Get over it. Move on. I just wanted to ask some questions because I got the great answer of who knows.
And we can move on.
Yeah, not that's a bad answer, but I'm just curious what somebody else would think about the same stuff. So there's a lot of, well, this is the only game I really cared about too much. But the other game, well, that's not true. Colorado State had to win. Oh, this game also, Spartans bowl eligible now.
Yes, congratulations.
And you may or may not be going to a bowl game. Thanks for beating.
Yeah, you may have ruined it for everybody. Congratulations.
You ruined everybody $10 million. How does that make you feel, San Jose State? All right, next game. If we go in order, it's BYU-Nevada. This was a weird game. BYU ended up winning 28-23. Did you happen to catch any of this game?
I did not, no.
Okay. No, no problem. I can walk you through kind of what happened because Nevada. We both know how bad Nevada's defense is, right?
Yes.
It was, I believe, 102nd in total score, defensive scoring, and 119th in total yards. First half, they gave up only 150 yards. Taysom Hill, the BYU quarterback, had 98 yards passing the whole game. They ended up still giving up 500 yards, but I don't understand the first half. Nevada was winning 7-0. Anytime, somehow their defense line, which we know is not, besides Kendall Brock, they have nobody. They're pressuring, sacking, getting hands in the ball in the face. Or, wait, that's not the right phrase. I'm just looking there. Hands on the ball, knocking the ball. Wow, I've had a long day today. But it's just weird. Their defense somehow stepped up and held BYU to basically nothing because, as I know a little bit, BYU's offensive coordinator is kind of a weirdo play calling. Let's have a running back rush 40 yards on three carries, and that's all in the first quarter. Nothing else the rest of the half.
I'm sorry?
I'm just saying their offensive coordinator for BYU had their running game blew up for BYU eventually, but in the first half, their best running back had 3 carries for 40 yards all in the first quarter. But for some reason, he goes away from that to try to pass. And if you watch this game, nothing was working for BYU. And he's just a weird guy. It's just an odd thing. Like, why do that? And then he ends up with a career high 200 more yards in the second half.
I'm looking at the box score, too. And one of the things that stands out to me is that it seems, at least in the first half, that BYU was kind of shooting themselves in the foot with penalties.
Some people.
That they ended up with, ended up with 14 on the day. And that it seems like there were some inopportune, you know, penalties that were either stalling drives or extending Nevada drives that were ultimately stalled out. And so that's why it kind of gave the impression that there was a defensive battle.
There was a little bit, but some of those penalties, because some BYU fans on Twitter were blaming the Mountain West refs for this game. And there were a few calls here and there, but the big one was there was a play where they called – you never see rough – like a. It was a play because there's Jamal Williams, I think it's the second half, but you know there's always where the running back never goes down and there's like 10 guys on him. They just end the play and that's it.
Yeah.
There was a play where I forget which Nevada running back had the ball, but he's running and BYU defender Kyle Van Noy is tackling and the running back's not falling over but getting pushed backwards. Van Noy basically gives him like a wrestling tackle to the ground, like drives him to the ground. You never see that called as a like unnecessary roughness, and people were blown up. That's the worst call ever because Jamal Williams, the play before, I kind of thought he went too rough on the ground, but there were a few things here and there, a few pass interference calls, but the big one, and this is the weird. I don't understand why BYU fans were so upset about this. The offsetting penalties. There were not even offsetting penalties. This was just a terrible play in Nevada. They got bailed out, like you said. They got bailed out so many times. Cody Fajardo threw a terrible pass that was picked off. There was a hold. There was a holding penalty on Nevada, and then a roughing the passer. And they're saying, they're saying the rule needs to be changed because there's interception. Because if there's offsetting penalties, or even in that case, even if there was no penalty against Nevada, roughing the passer, you know what I mean? That's a penalty. I don't. BYU fans are weird. That's all I can say about that. I'm not too far off, am I?
I really have no idea. You would know BYU fans better than I do.
Well, I know on Twitter, I see what BYU fans everywhere. But it's just weird. Like, they're saying, I just think it's odd, that rule that people are starting to come out saying, that's a stupid rule. It's not a stupid rule. You have a penalty, it negates the play, regardless if it's good or bad for your team. You can't have it both ways. That was kind of, I thought that was kind of weird that they, and also there was, another penalty. I'm just going to talk about penalties, because that was a big topic of the game. You remember there was the penalty, you can't dive over the guy in the defender, right, for go blocking a punt. Like you can jump over the shield guy.
Yes.
And they're saying that is so not a penalty. That shouldn't be in there. 5 seconds later I do my computer magic, Google shield blocking punt rules. It was a rule in 2012 where you can't dive over the shield guy, and they're all complaining after I put it on there. That's a crap rule. That rule needs to be changed too. I'm like, you can't change every rule if it doesn't go your way. They're just a weird bunch. But this game, it ended up being typical Nevada in the second half, as you can tell, by giving up about 400 rushing yards.
Yeah.
And they're okay. The last we're going to say about this game, because this was Nevada's game. Okay, if you go for an onside kick, isn't the best strategy to do the quick kick, a short kick, right?
Normally, yes.
Normally, and hear you in your voice probably struggling. What onside kick did they do? Let's do a kick where it goes about 25 yards in the air and about 20 yards down the field.
Oh, man. I know exactly what you're talking about. Reason, Fresno's done the same thing like several times, and I never understood why they do it.
Are they going to run down and catch it? Is that what your thinking is? They got one super fast, the track star who never plays. Line him up, he'll run down there and catch it. That's what they did, and they almost got it because I think a BYU got kind of stuck because the hand team was there, but they had a tight end who's in between, but he kind of fumbled it, just dropped on it. But it was I don't get why they do that. I don't get the element of surprise.
I don't have a good answer for that either.
Yes, we got it again. I don't have a good answer for that. This game ended up, 28-23. Nevada's defense showed up in the second half as we know and love, which means they're not very good. They didn't have a good running game. They had like I said this in my preview, they need at least one running back to do good. They had a hodgepodge of 40-yard rushers. And, yeah, that's all I got. They gave up the backbreaker. That shouldn't be that difficult to say. The 35-yard touchdown run by Taysom Hill, where he was untouched the whole way. Whatever. Nevada lost 4-8.
Well, I think it also probably didn't help that Taysom Hill was 14 of 18 on the day passing the ball, even if it was for only 100 yards. You know, that's still, you know, about his most efficient in the year.
Yeah, I get your
point. So he didn't make mistakes.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I just like this Jamal Williams line. 218-yard rushing, average 14.6.
Yeah, that's not going to get the job done.
Yeah, let's move on. Nevada season's done. Better luck next year because Cody Fajardo is back in. Yeah, we'll talk about them later on. The other big game. Oh, wait, I skipped one. Air Force, Colorado State. This is on ESPN3, and I didn't bother to watch it. But it looks like Colorado State is good when they play against really bad teams. 50-13 win.
Yeah, you know what? I forget. I wish I could remember who I was supposed to attribute this to. Somebody pointed out earlier that Colorado State hasn't beaten a team with a winning record all season.
Interesting. We can find that out shortly. But they just...
Somebody commented on that in some thread somewhere. Decrying, you know, why is Colorado State going to get a bowl bid before UNLV and San Jose State? And then they brought up that point, and I was like, I did not know that. That is
interesting. I'm banning ESPN now. Every page I click on, they have auto video, and it annoys the crap out of me. Every single page. I'm on a box score, and it gives me an auto pop-up. Let's see. They beat Cal Poly. Wait, did Cal Poly have a winning record? FCS Cal Poly? Let's find out. But the rest of their wins. UTEP? No. Wyoming? No. Hawaii? No. Nevada, New Mexico, Air Force? That would be correct. They did play Alabama close. Hey, Cal Poly has a 6-6 record. So they beat nobody.
Not a winning record.
Yeah, not a losing record, but not a winning record. However, that's fine. They can do what they can. But this game... started out 58-0. They scored the first 58 points in this game.
Yeah, story of the day was Garrett Grayson.
Yeah, apparently, I know people aren't too high on him, but man, 395, not too bad. Three scores.
Well, I mean, when you're going against that secondary, you really have no excuse not to throw a lot of yards.
Definitely, yeah, Air Force secondary. I haven't been good in a couple of years. My favorite Mountain West running back, Kepri Bid, did have three touchdowns, only 79 yards, though. But he has, what, 30 rushing touchdowns this year? Does that sound about right?
That sounds about
right. He has a lot. He leads the nation with... No, he's 28, sorry. I was mistaken. But still leads the nation. So let's move on. We don't need to discuss that game anymore. Air Force is... This is the worst year in at least a decade. So moving on. I know in your projections, are you assuming Colorado State will go to a bowl game?
Well, I thought we were going to talk about the bowl projections later, but...
Well, you are, but just yes or no really quick, do you think?
Spoiler alert, yes. Okay. I do believe they would go to a bowl game.
All right, just making sure. Not that we discuss where, but we are. If you listen to our show, you know I jump around a lot. So you should be prepared for everything. Next game was the game Utah State-Wyoming. Utah State will play your Fresno State Bulldogs next Saturday. And I like how, really quick, I like how there was in the press release for the Mountain West last night, the game location will be decided on Sunday. It's like, really? Is that really something that needed to be decided? And then, like, early Sunday morning, email, Fresno State will be hosting the Mountain West title game. Like, less than 12 hours later. But I thought that was kind of odd. I'm like, yeah, folks. But Utah State won. Utah State's won 5 in a row. How does Wyoming not show up when they have a chance for a bowl game? Or at least be bowl eligible? Nothing. They played.
You know what? I don't know if it's so much as, you know, Wyoming losing the game as much as Utah State bringing the wood. You know, they have probably the best defense in the conference, and they had, what, you know, 2.5, 3.5, 7.5, you know, like 10 tackles for loss, you know, and Wyoming ended up having under 200 yards of total offense.
I figure Brett Smith could do a bit more. He usually does, regardless of who he's playing.
I guess it was bad Brett Smith today.
Yeah, it's. I guess so. And we can. Utah State won. They've won, 5 in a row. Daryl Gerritsen is proving to be a pretty good quarterback. Not great. more. He's doing a good job. I'll leave it at that. We'll just say that. He's not being awesome. He's not doing terrible. But he goes 20 for 29. And I guess when you're up so many points, you don't really need to be that going downfield all that often. But this game, okay, so they're playing Fresno State. We don't need to talk about this game more than anything else besides Dave Christensen first resigned, then was fired, and now he's gone. I joked because I wrote something about a week before, if it was to Hawaii, he should be on the hot seat, which he should have been anyways. Because I, beginning here, if you know, people listen, I was high in Wyoming when they started 4-2. I'm like, they're putting up points against everybody. Figured, all right, they'll be good. Defense, similar, I kind of thought them as Fresno a little bit. Good offense, defense isn't there. We'll see if they can keep him in the game. And that can't. But he's gone. What is your thought? Why would they say he resigns and then gets fired, but he's still getting paid his base salary for the next 3 years? It's just kind of a weird thing if he resigns.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it again, but I don't have an answer for that. I guess that maybe it was easier for the university to just, you know, be a little more assertive and say, you're not going to resign. We're going to, fire you and move forward on our own terms. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. They did have the president that left and they fired him this year. He just left a few weeks ago because they did that study. Because there's that long piece that Stephen Godfrey did when he's up at Laramie for the Fresno game, I believe it was. They did some study which cost him $35,000, basically saying this program is going to be stuck. Mediocrity is what's expected. And I think Christensen did do better than Joe Glenn, but I don't know how they can get a coach and expect to be better than what they are, besides competing for a bowl game every maybe 3 years.
Well, I mean, I don't want to sell Wyoming short because, I mean, honestly, how much of a chance did Utah State have coming into the conference this year? How many people actually expected Utah State to get to the conference title game? You know, I don't think.
Well, that was more Boise State supposedly still being where they're at.
You know, Boise's having a down year. So, you know, the next time Boise has a down year, who's to say, you know, it can't be Wyoming that jumps up and grabs that conference title spot. I think that's the kind of thing that they want to be in that position more often than they're not.
They have the talent. The thing is, they have talent on offense. Like, you see what Brett Smith, Robert Heron, and even Sean Wick and Brandon Miller running the ball. They've all shown they can do it. I don't know why there's this thing where partway through the season, the wheels fell off. They gave up like 50 points the last half of the season. They fired Chris Tormey. They fired the offensive coordinator. The offensive coordinator left to go to a worse job in New Mexico State. And so the last guy standing is Christensen. And he had 3 years left on his contract. I don't see why. Because this year they weren't. I guess the way the season ended is why he got fired. Because I felt one more year of Brett Smith, they could go over the hump. But now, I don't know what's going to happen to the program. Not that we should expect all that much. But here's the thing. They have no talent in the state of Wyoming. They have one guy who's coming into the next year's class, one Division I scholarship, or one Division I caliber player in the whole state of Wyoming. There's nobody in the state. They're the least populated state in the Union, correct? Denver, Montana, pretty low. I know for a fact the smallest Division I FBS school for population per capita population. What should be the realistic goals for them every year? I think Christian was doing just enough to be okay, I thought, outside of losing the way he lost.
Well, I mean, it's not like the Mountain West has any real juggernauts in the foreseeable future. You know, Boise, you know, they bring in a lot of talent, but they still don't bring in like 4- and 5-star talent on a consistent basis. Aren't most of their recruits usually 2- and 3-star?
Yeah, they may get the 1-4-star every other year, maybe.
And I mean, the same thing with, you know, a team like Fresno. You know, other teams are on the way up. I mean, UNLV, we'll talk about them in a little bit, but I mean, no one expected them to win 7 games this year, and they did.
Nope.
So, you know, it's not easy, but it's not impossible because other teams have shown this season that it can be done. You can win with 2- and 3-star recruits in, you know, less than desirable destinations.
Yeah, it is. It's just getting people in Laramie because I've been there. I got stuck there overnight, so I was heading to visit some people in Colorado Springs. Driving back, I got stuck overnight. The weather's just awful and terrible. It's just a tough place to take kids to go to want to stay. And I guess what they really need is just some energetic guy who can just recruit and have the coordinators do all the work. or most of the work. But I don't know who wants to take that job.
Well, I mean, somebody out there is going to take a chance. Yeah. I mean, we could always make the joke about Lane Kiffin.
It has already been done.
You look at the team that beat them, Utah State. I mean, Logan isn't exactly, a hot spot.
It's not. I was there for Utah State BYU. I've been there before. It's two plus hours from Salt Lake.
Gary Anderson. They hired Gary Anderson. He took them to an 11-win season last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hired, another right guy, Matt Wells, who kind of kept it rolling, even after they lost their dynamic playmaker quarterback. So, it's not an impossible task. It's, I think it was Bill Connolly who said this. You never really know if a head coach, or a coordinator is going to be the right hire until after you have the evidence of what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
So, Wyoming is in a tough spot, but I'm not going to say that it's impossible because there are other teams in the conference that are making it happen.
Yeah, it's true. And with the thing with Utah State, the reason that I think they turned around so well because of what Gary Anderson's done. He coached at Southern Utah for their FCS program. He's a assistant at Utah. He's the reason Utah got all these players and recruited so well because he is their main recruiting guy at University of Utah. So he knew the state. He's already picked off one or two guys, pretty good guys to go to Wisconsin from him for the 2015 class. I think it has to come down to recruiting. You can have X's and O's like what Urban Meyer did when he came to Utah. He just came in with this completely different type of offense that nobody really saw or used before. And there was just enough talent at Utah, there's just enough talent at probably every school in the Mountain West. For the most part, if you have a good offensive system, you can come in and do it. It's tough to win a BCS bowl game in 2 years with the recruiting class, but I think they just need a guy who can bring in some player. I don't know, what do they need? A good recruiter or have some off-the-wall scheme that will get players to want to go there? Kind of the balance of what you really want.
I think my basic answer would be yes.
Yes, both. But what do you think is more important, recruiting or having a coach's scheme?
I think if you have the scheme, you can make
get the players.
Yeah, okay. I mean, because look at Boise State. They don't get the best players, but they've been to two BCS games. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I was looking at a quick list. Our friend over at Cowboy Altitude put up a quick list of who could be considered. They have a couple guys here. The most interesting one. There's two. Greg Brandon, who's the OC at New Mexico State, was with Wyoming before. Could be interesting. But the one that's the most interesting hire is, have you heard of Bob Stitt?
I'm sorry, who?
Probably Bob Stitt.
Oh, man.
If you don't know it, I'm not going to hold it against you because I didn't know when I first looked at it. I had to read a little bit on it.
Hold on a second. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick.
Oh, you're actually going to look. Okay, look, you can look it up.
All right. Bob's head coach. Oh, that guy. I know that guy.
Dana Holgorsen credited with that fly sweep a couple years ago.
The mastermind.
Apparently, yeah. This is just their quick initial list or anything, but that would be an interesting hire.
He certainly knows what he's doing.
And he's won well, but a low level. I don't even know. The only closest coaching hire I can think that would be similar to that to Gap is when North Texas hired Todd Dodge out of high school, South Lake.
And that didn't work out very well.
Yeah. He was a dominant program in high school there in Dallas. Like, crushed the highest level in Texas. Is a pretty big deal, but then didn't do too much at Demean Green. So I don't know who to hire, but I think they need to go because I think Bob Stitt's an older guy, you would think. I don't know. We'll just see how it goes. But they just need to find somebody who's never been a head coach before. Because they got Christensen from Missouri as an OC, so that's a fairly high-level job to move to Wyoming. But we'll see how it goes, and check our website. We'll have updates daily on this project.
you have to wonder, too, because, Wyoming, even though Christensen didn't have the record that they would have hoped for, they paid him a lot of money to accumulate that record. So it makes you wonder whether the university will be willing to front that kind of money to the next guy. Because, he was like the second or third highest paid coach in the conference, right?
It was over $1 million per year.
Yeah, so, if
DeRuiter, Peterson, I think it was when Peterson, didn't DeRuiter make after bonuses about $1 million?
So, I mean, do you think
McElwain as well. Yeah, over $1 million at that school is pretty crazy.
So do you think they'd be willing to give $1 million to the next guy?
No. They have a new president. They're going to owe him $500,000 for 3 years. It's not like Wyoming's flush with cash. By any means. It's not going to be a current head coach unless it's at the FCS or below level. Unless they – some people throwing out Brent Peace from – just got fired from Florida, former Boise OC. They could there's a Boise State coordinator who's now an Arkansas State head coach. Is that Brian Harsin, I believe?
Yes.
Him. I don't know if he'd want to come back to the area. Jason Wilcox, a Washington defensive coordinator perhaps, or Justin Wilcox. Just because he's from there, I don't know. I'm just throwing out a few names that probably don't make a little sense, but just because of the familiarity with the recruiting landscape.
I mean, it isn't as though Wyoming is the worst spot in the world. It's not an easy spot.
Dude, you can't say that until you've actually been to Laramie, Wyoming.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, the Mountain West isn't a conference with haves and have-nots, obviously.
Not for the most part. There's a tier system, but it's not. With Boise State falling back to earth, and Fresno probably will next year. There's a gap, but not like you said, like a huge gap, I don't think.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on away from this stuff. Like I said, I have like 3 updates in my mind I'm going to do after we're done here, so there'll be plenty to talk about. Next game, Boise State. I'm surprised Boise State won 45-17, just because they already knew they weren't going to the title game. The only interesting thing here was that Joe Southwick only played a little bit. He did have a touchdown pass. But I just kind of thought New Mexico, even though they're missing Cole Gauci and Casey Carrier, that they would have Let me rephrase that. The difference in outcome makes sense for them missing those two players, but the outcome doesn't make sense because Boise had nothing to play for and playing a crappy late-night game in Bronco Stadium.
I mean, let's be real. You know, New Mexico is just not a very good team.
Yes, let's be real. Yes, we know. Yes. Good. Excellent commentary we get. Mexico's not very good, and a bunch of, I don't know. No, I'm kidding. Just messing with you.
I'm not going to say they're worse than they were last year. I would just say they're about the same as they were last year, which is below average. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and missing their best players when they're actually competitive. And
missing their best two players. That's never a good thing.
So I guess Joe Southwick, he played a little bit. I guess he'll probably play in the bowl game if he played a little bit here. Hey, there was a Nick Patty sighting, so we got to mention that every time. Since everybody likes to talk about the 5'8" quarterback.
Uh-huh.
That's all I got. They won big. They're going bowling, 8 wins. So let's move on. Last or 2 more games. This game was weird. I watched most of this game. Announcement right now. Chris is messaging me right now. # Lane Kiffin for Wyoming? ? I should tell him we've already discussed that.
Great minds think alike.
Yes. Because there was somebody, I think it was one of the Fresno guys who always asked questions on Twitter about the show. They're out for questions. He goes, hey, how about Lane Kiffin to Wyoming? But yes, Chris is joining us, even though he's not joining us for a moment.
He's with us in spirit.
Yes. All right, so I sent the message back. Let's get back to what we're talking about. UNLV, how does this happen? I watched 90% of this game. UNLV just came out and, after that first touchdown, did whatever they wanted against a San Diego State team who looked like they didn't want to be there at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the drive chart and, you know, touchdown, missed field goal, touchdown, touchdown, field goal, touchdown. And they were going the length of the field on most of them. And they weren't taking a lot of time doing it. I didn't get the chance to watch this game either. So this is kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, I kind of figured, I was hoping for a close game. I just kind of watched most of the first half. I kind of flipped around between this and Boise later on. But they just did whatever they wanted. Caleb Perry. Well, not even really that. The running game didn't do anything special, but look at Caleb Perry. 5 touchdown passes. Their defense played well. They picked off Quinn Kaler a couple times. It's just a blowout. That's all it was. And I don't remember the last time UNLV's blown out anybody.
Yeah, it looks as though that the Rebels were able to shut down San Diego's running game, too. I mean, Adam Wayman only had 12 carries for 19 yards. Or, excuse me, 11 yards. So, you know, that's not going to get the job done.
No, Pumphrey did okay. I don't think there was an injury, but hold on. Sorry, I lost my train of thought because I got an awesome auto video. I need to go to CBSSports.com instead. But I was looking at the UNLV's victories. They Air Force kind of 20 points, but this game, I thought, because, I don't know, UNLV won big. There wasn't anything impressive, but the two turnovers they forced, and I can't say five touchdowns is not impressive, but only 270. Yeah. But Devontae Davis is, him and Devontae Adams are probably the best two wide receivers by far in this league. He averaged 21 yards a catch per reception and four touchdowns.
I mean, the other thing too, you guys make fun of Seamus McMorrow.
Yes.
Pretty much every single chance you get. But I'm looking here, you know, early in the first quarter, they're down, I think, 7-0 or 14-0. And San Diego drives to, you know, UNLV's 22-yard line, and they, instead of kicking the field goal, because obviously they don't have any trust in McMorrow, they end up turning it over on downs. And then, you know, two drives later in the second quarter, they turn it over on downs again, you know, across midfield. So
yeah, I noticed that. That was not a good thing for them.
You know, not having a trust in your special teams was probably the backbreaker that was able to allow the Rebels to pull away pretty early.
Yeah, we don't have a kicker. And Chris has always said, Rocky Long needs to stick to his gumption when he said last season, I'm not going to punt on fourth. Maybe I'll never punt on fourth down. Now we know why. It was Seamus, who is a terrible kicker. But
yeah, he had no attempts on the day.
Yeah, why would you give him an attempt? Why would you even want him to? I was just surprised by the blowout. Kind of, it didn't seem like a blowout, but it was, because it's kind of, besides a few, the one or the two, not excuse me, not two, but the two, yeah, two long touchdown passes. I don't know, but UNLV, they got 7 wins. I think they'll go to a bowl game after beating San Diego State, but we'll get back to that later. Final game of the weekend, and then we'll get to bowl stuff here in a minute. Hawaii gets on the board. 1-11 Hawaii Warriors. Congratulations.
No longer unwin-feated.
Yes, them and Southern Miss did not end the season 0-12. And like me and Chris joke, Hawaii, the reason Hawaii is doing well, because they went away from the quadrant quarterback system. Stuck with Sean Shorter, who had another good game, 322, three touchdowns, a pick. And their defense actually showed up, because we all know what Army does. They triple ops run the ball. The yards don't really matter, but they only gave up just over 4 yards a carry, and that's what you need to do against these teams to win.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that, you know, even though they got the win, they didn't make it easy.
Nope.
Because they had 11 penalties to kind of go along with the, running team of the year is the most penalized team in the conference. And, you know, Army put up a run late. They scored 35 points after halftime.
21 in a
row. So even though Hawaii was, you know, they pulled out the win, they were never really comfortable after halftime. You know, they were up 28-7, and then, you know, Army scores three straight touchdowns to tie the game at 28. And then they basically trade touchdowns the rest of the way, and you know, Hawaii is able to pull it out.
Yeah, they got the back-to-back, and they got Joey Osafa, who had 154, and then, I'm going to butcher his name, but Steve Akalakalaka.
Steve Lakalaka.
Oh, I get too many things. Yeah. Oh, it's not an I there? It looks like an I. So Steve, okay, I looked at the wrong thing. I thought it was Ikalaka. So Steve Lakalaka, 104 yards. Those names are great to pronounce. But they, I don't know, they've got the win. Is Norm, okay, we're done with the games. Let's get to this, because me and Chris discussed Norm Chow's status. Is he going to, I'm shocked Christensen was the first coach to be gone. Is Norm Chow next? Or is he going to have one more year and then say, I'm done with coaching?
You know what? Having seen the way that the season has gone for Hawaii, it isn't as though they've been blown out in a lot of their losses. They've been very close. They've perfected the art of, you know, garbage time offense. So, you know, there is something there, and they, you know, they almost took down Fresno State. I remember that very well.
Yes.
I was on the edge of my couch trying to will my team to victory. So I think, you know, the record says that they took a step back this year, but I think, you know, people who watched most of the games would probably say that they took a step forward this year. And so I think Norm Chow is probably going to get another shot.
I think it would have been a case where he'd more of long line step down and not get fired. But he did. There was, before this game, there's 5 games by one possession or 7 points or less, one possession that they, you're in, the, including that Fresno game, they're within those games to win. I think once they finally realize Taylor Graham's not the quarterback they need or want, he just needs another offseason after playing a year, another spring in the offense. But they have been playing a little bit better, especially with, like I said, with Joey Osafa. actually playing on a not fractured foot or getting to play, he was one of the best running backs in the Mountain West. He, every game he played this year, let me pull it up really quick, he had over 100 yards on the ground. I think he averaged about 150 per game total offense, because he did get into the receiving game a little bit against Wyoming. But on the ground, he had his four games back, 191, 150, 91, 154. It's about, what, 170 per game or so? Right? Well, man, just above 150. If they did the whole year, this could have been not anything spectacular, but maybe four or five wins. They had injuries a lot. Billy Ray Stuntsman's out for a while. They lost multiple players. Norm Chow, I don't know, did their offensive coordinator get fired or whatever happened a week before the season? They had a lot of stuff go against them, but they've played better, and they might. I guess they'll be back, because you think it would happen by now, unless it happens Monday.
I mean, you were talking about them losing, skill position players to injury. Their senior wide receiver Chris Gant has actually very quietly had a pretty good season. He's got almost 1,000 yards. He finished with almost 1,000 yards. He had 16.5 yards per catch. And he had 9 touchdowns. That's a pretty good season for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, they weren't especially efficient with their passing game, but they finished 3rd in the conference in passing offense behind Fresno and San Jose. The caveats there is that they had, only 57% completion percentage, and they were far and away the most interception-prone mm-hmm. passing offense in the league. But
That's part of it, playing so many quarterbacks until the final four games. They stuck with Schroeder.
Yeah, so I think that, there are things that Hawaii fans can feel good about, even though, guys like Schroeder and Gant are going to be moving on. I think that the system is in place, after a little bit of, early rough stretches where, we're thinking back to that USC game where the offense looked really bad, and the quad QB system didn't actually work out very well. But once they found a guy who worked the system, they played pretty well.
Yeah, because their last couple of games, they beat Hawaii. That Wyoming game was just nuts. I did get a chance to watch that online last week. But that game, 59-56, overtime game, Wyoming's not very good. But the last couple of games, two overtime games, San Diego State, Wyoming. Navy was a little bit closer than what they thought, 42-28, and CSU was one touchdown in UNLV. Like, the last half of the season, outside of the Navy, they were in every game. And that San Diego State game, they probably should have won. There was that one touchdown where there was an offsides, but San Diego State just went with the play, and the Hawaii guys kind of just stopped. They thought it was a false start or something, and they got a cheap touchdown kind of that way. And they could have won that game, but they've improved. I assume Norman Charles will be around, but who knows about the next year. We have a lot of offseason to discuss, or maybe not discuss why as much as we need to.
Yeah, one last thing I'd like to bring up, though.
Mm-hmm.
I looked this over because, Hawaii was far and away, the most turnover-prone team in the conference. But on the flip side, they actually finished 2nd in the conference in total takeaways.
That balances out that turnover
margin. Yeah, so they finished with a minus 10 turnover ratio, because they had 34 giveaways. But they had 24 takeaways.
Yeah.
So, that's not totally consistent from year to year, but that is something else that, Hawaii fans could be encouraged by.
Yeah, if you get that many takeaways, but giving the ball that much is – because if you're even, you're going to be fine. Like CSU, the reason they're probably so good, part of it, they're plus two on the year. Nothing great.
Colorado State?
Yeah, Colorado State was +2 on the year. We look at San Jose State, -5. If they had been even, they could have 3 more wins.
Exactly.
Stuff like that happens all the time. And San Diego State, pretty good team, -12. So, but Hawaii, yeah, if you look at the total gained, Boise State was better than them in total gained turnovers. All right, let's move on. Bowl stuff. So, I looked up the rule because I thought there was a rule where if you're a 7-5 team, you had to be taken over a 6-6 team. Apparently, that's like a 3-year-old rule. So I was thinking, why is UNLV getting shut out with 7 wins? But your projections, what was your thinking of? Because you left out UNLV, correct?
Yes, they drew the short straw in my prediction.
Why is that? Because of their UNLV?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that nobody can ignore is that the bowl games are there to make money. And out of all the teams that are you know, in content that have earned bowl eligibility. You know, UNLV is the one team where it's like, you know, they didn't really get a lot of support from their home fans throughout the year. I mean, they drew about 26,000 for their home opener against Arizona, where they got blown out. But I mean, 2 months later, or, you know, 3 months later, when they're blowing out San Diego State on the home field, they drew 10,000 less fans to that game.
There's also a game that gave away, I think, free tickets.
Yeah, so I mean, those are bad signs for bowls. Like, you know, even, you know, the lower level bowls like Hawaii and, you know, the Idaho Potato Bowl. You know, are UNLV fans going to travel even if, you know, if it seems like their fans aren't going to even show up when the games are at home?
Yeah.
I think that's doubtful. I mean, you know, politics is going to play a part in it whether we like it or not.
Because you know who their interim AD is, right?
No, I don't.
Former Las Vegas Bowl chairman.
Because
She was ticked about the final week of the season not getting on ESPN2 for that extra $500K for Saturday night game on. Because this game was on ESPNU, the UNLV game. So they really wanted that $500,000 to get on ESPN2. Didn't work out. So I don't know if she has any pull with anything. Because they're not going to Las Vegas. Well, even if they go there, that's the only bowl game would have a chance to give them some tickets. I would hope they go to the bowl game. But if you look, I think San Jose State will get the nudge because they beat Fresno. That's a pretty big win. They also beat UNLV. And it kind of goes by who you beat. And if you look at San Jose State, they beat Colorado State and UNLV and Fresno, three bowl eligible teams.
Yeah.
Whereas, like we said, wasn't it in CSU? But here's the situation. Would CSU get the nod over UNLV? I know you said yes, but just because they have the seven wins, even though they beat nobody with a winning record?
I think one bowl committee or another is going to be willing to overlook that. So, yes.
I think
a 7-6 record. You know, because I think they're going to have the benefit of, you know, a little bit of star power as well. People are going to want to see Caffrey Bibbs in a bowl game.
Nobody wants to see Devontae Davis? Come on, that's still pretty big. He's a pretty big deal too, I think.
Well, I think on a national level, I think Pre-Bibb probably has a little – he has a little more presence in the national consciousness than someone like Devontae Davis or Tim Kornet does.
And I guess with his, what, he has 20 touchdowns in his last six games or something like that for Bibbs.
Yes.
Because if you look at who – trying to see who UNLV beat really quick. The only bowl team they beat was San Diego State. Central Michigan's not the bowl team, are they? I don't think.
I think that one's probably up in the air.
6-6. I'm just thinking they'll get in because I know the Pac-12 will have extra teams just because they're getting only one team to BCS. But I'm thinking, what if you think UNLV – depending on location, because like I said, ticket sales rule most everything for these bowl games – unless there's a bowl game that they'd rather have UNLV instead of a MAC team or a Sun Belt team, assuming a Mountain West team would be higher up on the list than those other schools because there's still plenty of leagues that didn't fit their quota.
Yeah, I mean, the only two bowls that I could see that might be a possibility were the, you know, the Little Caesars Bowl, which would be a matchup against the, I believe it's the MAC champion, which if, you know, if Northern Illinois wins and goes to the BCS, they're going to have to fill that with probably
Bowling Green. Yeah, Bowling Green.
And let me go back. I'm going back to look at Jason Kirk's handy dandy bowl projections.
Yeah, because the SEC is not going to have. They have 10 spots. They're not going to fit all 10. They're actually going to have 11 spots to fill because they'll get two BCS teams.
Well, he has Syracuse slotted in because the Big Ten's not going to have enough teams fill that spot. You know, a team like Syracuse is probably going to be a better traveling team than a team like UNLV.
And being in Detroit, the other one, not terribly far.
Yeah, and then the other bowl that I pointed out was the Beef O'Brady Bowl, everyone's favorite.
Yes.
But the only way I think that would happen is if, you know, I wrote that, you know, if SMU and Rutgers both lose next week, I think that would leave the ACC one team short. But Jason Kirk has, I believe, Toledo slotted for that spot. So that might be a more likely destination. Like if, you know, if someone can convince someone else that UNLV would be a better fit than a team like Toledo.
There's also bowl games like the Independence Bowl is SEC 10 and then the Heart of Dallas Bowl is Big Ten 7 have open spots too.
Yeah, I mean, that's really – I mean, it's really kind of up in the air at this point. But there's going to be teams like Washington State and, you know, other teams like that that are probably going to be more appealing than a team like UNLV.
It's just – that rule stinks, though, because both those teams – I noticed those are teams in no spots. They're both 6-6. I wish – I know that it's not going to matter, but I wish they had that rule where the teams with the more wins get in because you had a better season regardless of what league you play in. I don't care if you're in the Sun Belt and you go 8-4. And you only have two bowl tie-ins, and you're the third team because you lost all four conference games. You should get in for 6-6.
UNLV is 7-5, aren't they?
Yeah, that's why they have a better record than both North Carolina and Washington State. That's my point. I wish that was in the case, or at least be highly considered, where this is a team with a better record, despite name-wise. We know Washington State, pretty big name, because Mike Leach, and North Carolina doesn't have much, I don't think, really more than UNLV, really, maybe a little. 6-16 expectations have been pretty terrible, or not terrible, but they've fallen off what they should have been. I just wish the 7-5 team would get the nod over a 6-16, just because you've had a better year.
Well, I mean, a team like Washington State's probably going to be stoked. They're probably going to get a lot of people traveling wherever they're going because they haven't been to a bowl game in a long time.
Correct. You would think they might, UNLV, but like I said, they can't fill out their home stadium. That's not very big.
I mean, if UNLV got the nod somewhere like the Potato Bowl over San Jose State, I wouldn't be surprised. I just think that a team like Colorado State and San Jose State both benefit from that little bit of star power mm-hmm. and that little bit of national consciousness that they already have that UNLV doesn't.
Yeah, that's just – well, I guess we'll know. I'm assuming bowl announcements. I guess the Mountain West – I guess the Mountain West actually won't have any announcements because they want to wait until that title game's over. Because there could be a lot of shuffling of who wants to go where. Because I'm hearing stuff like Hawaii Bowl really wants Boise State because their basketball team's out there and they want them to play. Or there's also Utah State is heavily involved with the Poinsettia Bowl because there's a rep at the game yesterday who said they really like Utah State. But that I'm assuming that means they don't want San Diego State in their home bowl game, which I guess they'd go to the – that would be an interesting situation because I'm assuming Boise's locked in to the Armed Forces Bowl for the three spots. If San Diego Bowl points in, it doesn't want the Aztecs. So that could be interesting to look into. We could discuss this all night, bowl scenarios, because there's a million of them. But is there anything else we need to add about this lengthy show about your Fresno State? Anything about a quick title game prediction really quick on Sunday night?
Well, I saw that the line opened at 4 in favor of Fresno State. I think that that's probably a little low.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling by the time the game rolls around, it'll probably be upwards of a touchdown.
Let's see if it changed right now, because I assumed it would change once the rankings come out. And they have come out. Let me just look really quick if there's been any changes here from Odd Shark. It has actually decreased down to a field goal. It was started actually 4.5, looks like. I must have, whatever the time I wrote that up. But it looks like it did start at 4.5, but now it's actually down to 3 or 3.5. That is interesting.
Really?
I get Utah State's defense is really, really good. But I'm thinking – but that's mainly their linebackers, not necessarily their cornerbacks, which is still good. But to cover all three of those receivers is very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be strength against strength definitely. But, you know, I have to be a homer. I have to give my team the edge.
I figure it'd be anywhere from probably about 5.5 by kickoff for Fresno State because you're at home. And that's all that 3 points really is. So it's really one, almost a pick 'em or 1 point game just on talent, I guess. Mm-hmm. If that's what they're saying. So I was assuming anywhere, like I said, 5 to 6 on the high end. Touchdown would be kind of, I'd be kind of surprised if it gets a touchdown, but I think 5 is where it will settle out. But we'll keep an eye on that every day and kind of see how it goes this weekend. So we got our excellent coverage, or we will have excellent coverage. I've done a few things. I'm assuming you will. We'll have our Utah State guy fill in with some stuff and. I assume if we'll discuss this off air about another dueling podcast with you and our Utah State guy. But thanks for joining me. You did a great job, even though we both of us said I don't know all the questions or I don't have a good answer for that. That is the theme of the podcast because we don't know a lot of people think because things are weird and yeah. So this is a crap way to end the show, but I hope everybody has a good listen and we will see everybody next time.